Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz, together with my compatriot, Professor Brendan Berry. We are both professors of law at WMU Cooley Law School, Tampa Bay campus. And I have to say this at the beginning of the show, that what Brendan and I say and the opinions that we espouse are our opinions alone, and they are not the opinions of necessarily the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School, its faculty, either individually or at large. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeff. I don't know how anybody could disagree with us on anything. I mean, that's aren't we always right?
You know, I mean, at least I think I am. So I don't know about you, but but I know that I'm always right. I go to sleep every night realizing that, and wake up in the morning saying, "Yeah, you were right."
It's so good to be me, right about everything.
I look in the mirror and I go, "Geez, if I just had hair, okay, I'd be perfect." But actually, this week, as I will talk about, I'm glad I don't have hair because otherwise it would be on fire over certain things. So I saved my scalp from a very bad burn, but Brendan, I have to be honest with you. The only time I disagree with you is when I want to yank your chain. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
That's the only time I really disagree with you. I just want to set you off. Every once in a while, because even Hezzy realizes, I think the whole world realizes, you're a pretty even-keeled guy. And when you talk, it always has the same tone to it. You never raise your voice. You never lower your voice. You never show anger. Okay. But the words kind of speak for you sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't really relay your emotion. Okay. And so every once in a while, I just got to get a rise out of you to make sure that, okay, I set you off and it really is in there somewhere. Okay.
Right. That's why I call you a gratuitous contrarian. That's my favorite term for you. Gratuitous contrarian.
Very good.
You know, I like that one. I'm going to put that on my card. Jeffrey Swartz, gratuitous contrarian. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll sell my services. You want someone to disagree with you? I'm your guy. Okay.
Right.
I don't have to be your friend. I just have to tell you you're wrong. Okay.
Right.
I think that'll work really well. Okay, I was looking for something funny to start the show with. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I got to put my coffee down before I spill it. Having spent my – oh, yeah, I got to tell this is a little funny thing. I was at St. Augustine this weekend. Marilyn and I went with some friends to St. Augustine. You know, for me, St. Augustine was my Statue of Liberty. You know how the people who live in New York never been to the Statue of Liberty? I've been in Florida now like 43 years, almost 43 years. Okay, and I have never been to St. Augustine other than go to the outlet malls when I stopped on my way up and down I-95. Other than I have never been to St. Augustine, had no desire to go to St. Augustine. I mean, what is it? A bunch of ruins. I mean, you know, I can see ruins anywhere, okay? I can just, you know, look at some of my old houses and know they're ruins. So my attitude is that I've never been there, but I get talked into going there. Now, forget the fact that the B&B we stayed at, Marilyn and I disagreed. We kind of got, how can I put it? We had a disagreement over how many stars we would give this place. I give it, you know, 1.5 or 2. She gives it 5. Okay. It's just kind of a disagree. But forgetting all of that, one of the days we go to the Fountain of Youth. Okay. There really is a place called the Fountain of Youth, the place they think is the Fountain of Youth. Okay. Where Ponce had to get off the boat to get some fresh water because they'd been without fresh water for a couple, 3 days. So this is the spot. This is the spot. And they created this whole theme park around. No, there's no rides, but it's like an archaeological place, and they give you all kinds of history stuff, like they shoot off a musket and cannons. But there's this one thing where this guy who founded the place did this show of how the founding of St. Augustine changed the world, changed the whole world. Mm-hmm. Okay, and he takes us through it, and he has this globe that at the time was like state of the art. To us, it's like a bad cartoon, but it's a state of the art. And they put this globe up there, And they show how by a land grant, the entirety of the North American continent was named La Florida by the Spanish king. So the Spanish, they founded it. They claimed everything within, you know, eyesight and beyond. We get all this land. And so through this land grant, he calls it La Florida, which basically is our state, the state of Florida. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. If I am Moron DeSantis, you know, the governor of Florida, okay, and I look at this, I'm sitting here saying, wait a minute, I'm going to file a lawsuit claiming that the entirety of North America belongs to the state of Florida. Therefore, I am now the governor of the United States. It's not even states. There's only one state, Florida. You all don't count anymore. Okay? And therefore, I have become the governor, president, and dictator, because he's trying to become a dictator in this state. Okay? And I'm in charge of everything now. Forget your constitution. Forget the president. It's all based on a fallacy that you all have your individual land. No, I own it all. I can just see this guy trying to pull this stuff off. And I'm looking at this map, and I'm just, like, dumbfounded. Okay? Where is Moron? I mean, why doesn't he come down here and learn this stuff? It's in his state. He should be okay. He's not down here doing it. So that kind of crossed my mind while we were doing it. I looked at Meryl. I said something. She was thinking the same thing. Okay. So just a little funny thing that happened this weekend. But it leads me into a couple of things that, as I said, set my hair on fire. And we start this show with, you know, what do you really think? And I'm going to – and I sent one of them to Brendan, and I kind of made dibs on it, but we'll get into it. There's another one that really set my hair on fire, and that is that apparently there are 15 states in the United States, okay, who are trying to ban medical treatments for transgender youths. And of course, if you're young, if you're under 18, okay, you're under the control of your parents. And so therefore they went after the parents. They went after the parents. They didn't go after the kids. They went after the parents and they went after the doctors. And Arkansas became the first state in the country last Tuesday that passed a bill that basically made it illegal for children under the age of 18 to receive any type of medical treatment to block puberty or gender confirmation surgeries or hormonal therapy for children under the age of 18, which, of course, require a parent's consent, and the parent would have to agree to it. The North Carolina lawmakers introduced another bill that would prevent medical professionals from providing practices and health care services on people under 21 and defined the sex of a person as genetically encoded into a person at the moment of conception, and it cannot be changed. Now, most people believe, by the way, I guess to the surprise of the North Carolina legislatures, that the idea that you are mistakenly assigned with the physical characteristics of one gender because you are genetically encoded with the makeup, the emotional and psychological makeup of the other gender, and that's your true gender, and that's assigned to you at birth too. It isn't. This is not something you get as a result of environment. This is just what happens when people start recognizing certain things. So, and apparently there's 22 bills pending in 14 other states, which were basically, according to Freedom for All Americans, which is an LGBTQ plus advocacy campaign, 21 bills are still being considered. Now, here's what I got, and here's what really bothers me, and I can talk more about what these bills are, but what really set my hair on fire is that these bills are being supported by the same people who said the following: these are my children, and if I don't want to vaccinate them, I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
I am in charge of my children. I raise them the way I see fit. I have the freedom to do this. And these same people are saying, yeah, you have the freedom to do this as long as I agree with what you're doing. If I don't agree, I can tell you what you can't do with your children. This is a parental decision. What happened to parental rights? These people who stand up and say, I don't want my children to learn critical race theory. I don't want my children hearing the word gay until they're at least 10 years old. I'm telling you how we're going to raise your children. But I have the freedom to raise my children the way I see fit. You people better get yourselves together and decide what you believe in. Or sit there and say, I have the right to stop you from doing anything I disagree with because my Bible says so. Your Bible doesn't say so. I'm a Jew, and I understand enough that Christ said, protect the weak, feed the poor, pray in private. You keep your religion to yourself. And don't tell me what your God tells you I should do with my children. I've had enough of this duplicity. Mind your own damn business. If that's what the way you want it to be, then you mind your business and I'll mind mine. You don't like being told what to do. I don't like it either. And enough is enough. You are the height of hypocrisy. Love thy neighbor as long as thy neighbor agrees with me. I'll take your New Testament and I'll rip it on you, and you will understand that you don't even know what the hell you're talking about. And most of all, do me a favor. Stop preaching the Old Testament. That's my book. You want to know what the Old Testament means? There are Jews everywhere who will explain it to you for the right price. Okay, you know, the Vulnerable Children Compassion Act, the Vulnerable Children Protection Act, all of you people who live in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, New Hampshire, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Utah, I'm talking to you. And that's what I really think.
Mm-hmm.
See, you got to learn to raise your voice to get people to listen to you.
Before you guys enter
into further, somebody's been on the line, so let's just see what they have to say or ask, and then we'll move on if that's okay.
Sure.
Sure.
So bear with me a moment. I'll bring this person in. Good morning.
Don't poke the bear.
Thanks for calling. Can you share your first name with us? Or you might just be listening. No problem. I'll put you back on the listening code, and you'll be able to hear the broadcast that way. Thanks for calling. Okay. Bear with me a second.
Brendan.
Okay, we're all done. Go ahead, Brendan.
Brendan.
Yeah.
Your turn, Brendan.
All right.
I got to go soak my head in the tub to put the fire out. Okay, you go.
Well, yeah, I'm going to, as usual, kind of dovetail off of your comments. There, transgender youth are the target du jour, right? It's always somebody. Politicians like Ron DeSantis and his ilk, they understand that when you are trying to grab and retain power, when you are trying to amass for yourself something akin to absolute power, when you're trying to get people to do what you want them to do, no matter how destructive that might be, you have to make them afraid. And, I remember studying this, years and years ago, kind of statecraft. How do you galvanize a country or a society? And there are a couple of different mechanisms for doing that. But the best scenario for a would-be dictator is that you have your population all in a froth about two things. The first thing being the enemy from without, right? The outsider who's coming to get you. And the second one is the enemy from within. It's very helpful to a would-be dictator if you got both of those things. The disease that's already here, right, but within our society that needs to be treated. And you see in these bills, you were talking about the transgender bill, and the 15 states who are mimicking that. In fact, if you look at all of the anti-gay, anti-LGBTQ proposals around the United States, just in this legislative session, they now number 150. It's not just the transgender medical treatment. It's also transgender athletes. It's these quote unquote "don't say gay" laws that are being enacted or at least proposed around the country. You add them all up, there's 150 of these proposals. Let me ask you a question here. I think you're going to get this right. How many of the 150 anti-LGBTQ proposals have been proposed by Democrats?
None.
None. Not one. Zero. Zero. It's Republicans who have proposed 150 anti-LGBTQ measures throughout state legislatures around the country. I would note as well some of the language that you're starting to see now. I don't know if anybody else, if you guys saw this, but in Florida, we now have an quote-unquote "don't say gay" bill, which bars the discussion of sexual orientation or gender identity in kindergarten through third grade, sending an obvious message, right, to youngsters who are questioning the feelings that they're having, right? There's something we call stigmatic harm, right? Where I don't have to actually break your leg to hurt you. I just have to stigmatize you and cause psychological or psychic harm. Send a message to you that you're lesser than, you're excluded from. Is there anything worse as a kid than being left out, right? Than being excluded, than being made fun of, the trauma that you carry that trauma for your entire life. It's bad enough for the schoolyard, right? For the state legislature, for God's sake, you get nothing better to do. I agree with you, Jeff. You know, one line in particular, you know, mind your own damn business.
Yeah.
Got all kinds
mind
of
mind your own business.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we got this "don't say gay" bill in Florida. It passes. It's signed into law. People are criticizing it. Students are walking out of classes and protest. And Governor DeSantis' spokesperson tweets out that the people who oppose this bill must be "quote unquote" the groomers. And all this is an anti-grooming bill. And now you're starting to see this language. There's grooming and groomers, right, floating around in the ether now about this issue. Let's think about that language for a minute. Proponents of LGBTQ rights, or people who would at least recognize the existence of LGBTQ people, are groomers. They're grooming whom? Oh, your children. Grooming your children. They're coming for your kids. They're going to turn your kids into one of them. They're going to infect your kids. What kind of language is that? These people know what they're doing when they choose words like this. That's no mistake. That's the governor's spokesperson.
Yeah. They're
we are in dangerous times. Yeah, they're coming for you. Right. And, you know, once these people, these Republicans, once they get done targeting LGBTQ, they'll move on to some other group. Right. They'll be back to the immigrants again.
They're coming for your jobs.
Yeah, right. They're coming for your jobs. Exactly. You know, it's I've talked about this before. You know, there are different types of bigotry. But bigotry can be motivated by different inputs. And, you know, one belief system would be that this other group is lesser than me. Or let's start with the easiest one, different. Right? They're different and strange, so they need to be excluded. I don't want to I don't want to interact with these people because I think they're strange and I don't understand them. Okay, that's one kind of bigotry. Another kind of bigotry is they're inferior, right? Not only are they different, but they're lesser than, right? So now not only can I exclude them, but I can also subjugate them, right? Because they're lesser than me. And then there's the third type of bigotry, which is that not that they're lesser than me, but that they're dangerous, right? That they're coming for me. It's interesting how Republicans have hit all three, right? That they have groups that they think are just different and strange, so they need to be kept out just because they're not us. There are groups that they think are inferior, so that it's fair to subjugate and oppress them. And there are those groups who are dangerous, right, who are coming for what you have. And that, as I'm going to use a historical reference here, when you get that kind of bigotry, right, this is a group that is dangerous and is coming for you and your kids, that is not a group that needs to be excluded or subjugated. That is a problem that needs to be solved.
Eradicated.
Right. That's how you get to genocide. No, I'm not accusing Republicans of genocide.
Yes.
But we cannot avoid, you know, people say never compare anybody to Hitler. Why not? If you're using the same tactics, the same propaganda, why don't we have to make the comparison?
Yes, we do.
There, I raised my voice. Congratulations.
Yeah, I love it. I love it when you do. It's just great. The truth of the matter is that yes, and every time in the past I have raised the comparison of a certain former president and his conduct being comparable and the actions of his followers being comparable to what happened between 1929 and 1933 in Germany and what would happen beyond that. Everyone says, no, don't raise the Hitler thing because, you know, he's not against the Jews. Well, here, let me put it to you this way. If you took Nazi Germany and instead of them going after Jews, they went after Mexicans, would that make it different? If you took 1933 Nazi Germany and you replaced the Jews with Orientals, would that be different? Or would it be the same thing except for it's a different boogeyman? So why isn't it a fair comparison? Why isn't what happened on January 6th anything different than the 1923 beer hall putsch? Why is that unfair? Why is it unfair when this certain former president proposed last week that we have to change things, and he's going to have Congress pass a law that gives the president of the United States the power to fire anybody he wants that's covered under Article 2 of the Constitution. Anybody in the executive branch, including the vice president, who, by the way, in case you didn't know it, people, are elected by you. They weren't hired by anybody. They were elected. This guy sees Putin and wants to be Putin, and Putin is nothing more than a living, honest-to-goodness, real Nazi. You want to know what he is? Look at what he accuses other people of being. You want to know what he's going to do? Look what he accuses other people of doing. There is no difference. There is no difference between his invasion of Ukraine and Hitler's invasion of Poland. His taking of the Crimea, no different than his taking of the Sudetenland. Absolutely no difference. It is the same damn thing. Shutting down independent press, and you only hear what he wants you to hear. And we had a president who thought that he was brilliant. We had a president that thought Putin was the smartest man he'd ever met. Of course, he wouldn't recognize the smartest man he ever met because he thinks he is the smartest man he ever met because he meets him every day in the mirror. So why shouldn't we compare things with Nazi Germany? There is absolutely no reason. The death of the Weimar Republic is no different than the proposed death of the Constitution of the United States. You destroy democracies from within. You do not attack them physically. People will fight back. Don't believe me? Ask the Ukrainians. They'll tell you all about it. And believe me, 80 years ago, I wouldn't say this about Ukrainians because they were as anti-Semitic as they come. But they elected a Jewish president. So they've come a long way, baby. So there's no reason not to compare things that are happening with Nazi Germany because you just don't like it. Well, you know what? There's a reason why you don't like it, so start recognizing what's happening here so you won't like that either. That's just nonsense. Absolute and total nonsense. It is trying to rewrite history. I know it's been 90 years since 1933, almost, at least by my addition. But it doesn't mean it didn't happen because it was 100 years ago. It doesn't mean the Civil War didn't happen because it was 160 years ago. It doesn't mean that we had slavery, that we didn't have slavery because it ended supposedly 160 years ago. And I blame all of this on the lack of education. I come back to that. I won't go on that. I won't go on that speech and that's in my talking points and standing up on my soapbox. That's just bothersome. Sorry about that, people. Just, you know, dig your way out of the hole that you buried yourself in, push the rock aside and come on out and see the real world.
Yeah.
Wow.
A couple points. You know, one is, you know, as long as we're talking about Republican efforts around the country, and, you know, of course, this sounds very, quote-unquote, biased or political bias. I don't know how you can't be biased at this point. I mean, there are people who are rational and want the best for us, and there are people who want something else. I'll come back to that in a minute. But big Republican efforts around the country to sanitize history, to change history, whether it's critical race theory or any, you know, you see now laws around the country about not talking about race or our history of discrimination in any way that would cause a student to feel angst. Right. Or I mean, are you kidding me? And conservatives say it's liberals who are the snowflakes who need a safe space everywhere. They're the ones who you can't talk about racism. It hurts their fifis. Can't talk about racism around these people. You know, they just makes them very upset. Can't say anything about sexual orientation.
That's because you're talking about them. It's because you're talking about them.
Right. Right. Well, that's an interesting point. You know, I always wonder these people who are so vehemently anti-LGBTQ, don't you have to wonder why? You can't get that upset about something that doesn't affect you personally.
Well,
that's not an issue.
I understand, but let's be honest about something. There can't be that many people in the closet.
Mm-hmm. No, there's also
the religious
part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. But I wanted to I want to set you up with something here because I wanted to point that out.
Set me up or
well,
set
we
me
were,
off.
Yeah, and it's some of this you've already thought it was a very salient point. Yeah. When we were talking before we came on this morning, you were talking about something you saw on TV this morning that you thought really encapsulated the moment that we're in historically. And I thought you should talk about that.
Yeah.
The geopolitical moment.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was listening, and I don't even remember who it was, but, you know, yeah, being the conservative guy I am, I was listening to Morning Joe this morning. And... Okay, it used to be a conservative show. Okay, it used to be Marco Rubio's favorite morning show. He was speaking and he was saying, we have come to, and I know we've all heard about flexion point this and flexion point that, but we've come to a point right now where there is a geopolitical recognition. There is a geopolitical movement. An awakening, whatever it may be, that we have to, countries, and I'll talk about us personally in this country, countries are starting to realize they have to make a choice. Okay? You have to decide you are on the side of democracy or you are on the side of authoritarianism. You either like what you see from Xi Jinping or Putin or others of their ilk, the leaders of Cuba, for example. You have to believe that that's what you want. You want what they have. Or you want democracy, small d. You can't have both. And the truth of the matter is that you can't play with authoritarianism. Hate to go back to Germany, but the industrialists thought they could control Hitler. They couldn't. The rich oligarchs in Russia thought they could control Putin. They can't. You can't play with authoritarianism. This is not a game. This is not something you can do for a while and decide you don't like it and get rid of it. Because once your democracy is gone, it is gone. That guy at the top is not going to give it back to you. That's why the Romans killed Julius Caesar, because he wanted to be an emperor. By the way, it's the Ides of March. That's why they killed him all those many centuries ago on this date. because the Senate saw their power being diminished and said, this guy wants to be a king. We don't have kings here anymore. And they stuck it in him about 45 times. You can't play this game. Americans, you can't play this game. You can't rabble, rouse, and cheer and have a great time playing with authoritarianism with the other guy, the former guy, or anybody like him, like Moron DeSantis, or whether it's Greg Abbott. Hey, Abbott, okay? You can't play with these guys. You are not going to control them. I keep telling you, you gun nuts, you think that this guy's going to protect your right to have a gun. He's going to take your gun away as fast as he possibly can if you give him the power. And you are giving him the power if you get your way. You have to make a choice. It is time to choose. The Ukrainians have made it clear. They made a choice. And they may end up with, not likely, but it could happen, defeating what's considered to be one of the great powers in the world in an out-and-out battle, a one-on-one battle. They may force those people to leave their country and take your body bags with you. And people in this country have got to make that choice. You've got to decide, do you want the Constitution or don't you? You can't play with it and give a little bit more power here, a little bit more power. You start messing with this document. You start changing the balance of power, and that's the end of it. There's a reason why it's structured the way it is. This is the Constitution today. Let's talk about the Constitution today. You can't do this. This is not the game of life. This is life. This is your life. It's your children's lives. It's your grandchildren's lives, and so on and so forth. You have to choose. Choose. Tell me what you want. And if a majority of you want to do away with the Constitution, I'm taking what I got. I'll pack up my children and my grandchildren and say, bye, bye. You have to choose. Or as the old expression goes, America, love it or leave it. The hell with your blue flags. And the hell with your with your belief in all of these conspiracies that don't exist that justify your existence. Enough. Make your choice. And if you're in the minority, I suggest you find an interstate highway that heads south and get the hell out of here. You can believe what you want, as long as you don't, your belief overcomes the majority's belief. I've had enough. I like my Constitution. Don't go messing with it. And I don't want Donald Trump, and I don't want Ron DeSantis, and I don't want Greg Abbott, and I don't want any of their ilk. I don't want the governor of South Dakota. I don't want any of those people. This guy was right. It's time to make it geopolitical. Make your choice. That's what I heard, and he was right.
Yep.
See, you set
it
up again.
Yep. And it is geopolitical. I mean, look at the strange marriage between the American right and Putin. It's right out there for everybody to see. I mean, you don't have to go digging for it. You got Trump openly praising Putin, still won't about Vladimir Putin, and then you've got Tucker Carlson, who has gotten to the point where Russian state TV runs a Tucker Carlson's commentary, and they're circulating memos over there in Russia about how it's imperative that their state-run media quote Tucker Carlson and show him as often as possible, because that's the best weapon they have to convince the Russian population. See, they're even saying this over in the U.S. This is the most popular talk show talk host in the U.S., which unfortunately Tucker Carlson is. He's given them everything they need. That brings me to another point that I wanted to talk about.
By the way, before you move on from Tucker,
yeah.
I want to make clear. I said this last week. I cannot believe that Rupert Murdoch and his sons let this continue to go out over their air. And they are complicit.
They're making money.
And stop buying their newspapers. Stop buying the Wall Street Journal. Let them know that this is unacceptable. Stop buying their tabloids. And let them feel the pain. And let them figure out whether this is what they really want. These are capitalists. What do they think they are, oligarchs? No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's my message.
No, that's all right. That's and they're.
I know he's listening, so.
Yeah, I'm sure. Right. Let's say and Tucker Carlson too.
Yeah, Tucker's listening to us very carefully, I'm sure.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's the other point I wanted to make, was sort of to say, look, let's talk about how serious this is. What's going on? What shouldn't be going on Rupert Murdoch's air? This sticks in my craw. You know how speaking of gratuitous contrarians, right? You know how there are people who there are certain words that they just, if you use that word, they just kind of jump on you just to try to make the point how smart they are and how you're just, you know, you're really not using that word the right way. And here's a word I'm going to throw out there and talk about for a minute. And the word is treason. And I'm talking about Tucker Carlson. Now, first of all, let's recognize, and I had this fight with somebody on the social media exchange.
You have
when I
one.
Okay. Yeah, wow. And I'll tell you what it was about. It's when I use a word.
I hope so.
Okay, so we're lawyers, right? We're lawyers. We studied the law. We are careful about how we use legal terminology, but I don't always in legal context. If I'm using the word treason, right, I could be using that in a legal context. If I'm saying somebody is actually formally, right, technically guilty of treason as a constitutional or statutory matter, that's one thing. But treason also has a colloquial meaning. Right, and so usually if we talk about somebody like Tucker Carlson, at least in a colloquial sense, non-legal sense, to say that he's treasonous, I think is perfectly acceptable, because there's no question, as I said earlier, that as you said, that he's giving Putin what Putin wants. I mean, he is a shill for Vladimir Putin. Beyond that, he's a weapon for Vladimir Putin, because a big part of what Vladimir Putin does is misinformation. As with any authoritarian leader. But I want to go a step further. anybody screaming and yelling, oh, don't say treason, you know, that has a specific meaning. Yeah, here's a specific legal meaning. The legal meaning of treason is the giving of aid or comfort to an enemy. An enemy usually is interpreted to mean an entity with which the United States is at war. Couple points. Number one, anybody who thinks we're not at war, you know, Jeff, when you and I talked earlier this morning, I wrote down something you said. I do that a lot, by the way.
I'm right. Flattered.
Yeah. But you use the word proxy war, the term proxy war, right? When it comes to, you know, who's Putin really after? And I watched somebody on TV last night who used to be an advisor to Zelensky, who said, you know, Putin's problem is not you recognize that Ukraine exists. He doesn't even think we're actual people. His problem is the United States, right? That's his real target. That's who he's really after. And we have to be clear-eyed about that. He's got scores to settle with the United States as far as he's concerned, Mr. ex-KGB agent. We're at cyber war with Russia. They interfered in the 2016 election. They tried to rig the 2020 election. I said earlier, you know, if you want to know what a tyrant is going to do, look what they accuse other people of, right? Donald Trump constantly saying, rigged election, rigged election, rigged election. Well, that's because that's what Donald Trump does with the help of Vladimir Putin. So I'm not saying we're in an active shooting war with Russia, but I don't think there's a very good argument to say that Russia is not an enemy of the United States. They are a stated, declared enemy of the United States. They attack the United States, like I said, in cyber war. They have attacked our democracy from within. Now, is Tucker Carlson giving them aid and comfort? Of course he is. He's helping Putin. I don't know. I say this every week. I don't understand the mindset of 40 people. I just don't understand it. How you listen to somebody like Tucker Carlson or Donald Trump and say that this is a serious human being who deserves my attention, right, and who deserves to be a thought leader, who deserves to guide me in my thinking. I have no idea how you can listen to this vitriol and the stupidity and say, oh, yep, that's what I want. That's what I want.
You know, I got to tell you, I happen to agree with what you're saying. I don't know how you cannot classify statements that are made, even by people who say things so unconstitutional or criticize the Constitution, not because you disagree with an interpretation, but you want to change it to basically remove the protections that we have. Or make rulings that are designed to limit those protections and not say, well, gee, he's a patriot. He believes in the Constitution. There are times that you have to look at and say, are you being, and this brings up another thing, and it really fits in with another thing we talked about this morning, and that is the majority in the United States Supreme Court really interested in the Constitution? Is that really the basis of the things and the decisions that they make? I believe you believe in the Constitution as a matter of law, not a matter of faith. And if you believe in it because of a religious faith, then you make your rulings based upon your interpretation of the Constitution, based upon that faith that brought you there. So is our Supreme Court majority really interested in the Constitution first? Or are they believing in their religion, their Bible, their Pope, and it's in his or their, as they go on for years and years, their infallibility? Is that what makes you decide things? And if that's the case, are you true to your oath? Or are you a traitor to the Constitution? Because the First Amendment says there shall be no establishment of religion, right? And if that's the case, and you're using your religion to interpret the Constitution, then you are being a traitor to the Constitution that you swore to protect. That's how far my thought process goes. Yes, I'm a member of the ACLU. I carry a card, and I give them contributions every year. So if you can say, oh, you're just an ACLU guy. Yeah, I'm an ACLU guy. I'll admit that. Okay. I'll stand right up and show you my card, okay? that you burn yours, I'll hold on to mine. But that's a problem. Am I ever going to get admitted to the bar of the United States Supreme Court? Not anymore. Don't care. Really don't care anymore. There was a time I did. I don't care anymore. I'm a year and a half from retiring from the practice, from law to get begin with anyway. So you know what? Don't care. So I think that you're right. If you, it goes beyond Tucker Carlson, but Rupert Murdoch is not an American citizen. I think his kids are. But Rupert Murdoch is a British citizen. He wouldn't get away half of what he does in the United States if it was in Great Britain. They got laws about that stuff. We don't. That's fine. I think that's constitutional to not have laws about that. Doesn't mean it, doesn't make it right. You're making a fortune off of the American people, and you want to tell us what we should do? You put people like Tucker Carlson on the air, and you think you have the right to have that out there just because it lines your pocket? How many millions, tens of millions of dollars do you need, Rupert? You're an old man. You're going to die soon. You couldn't spend everything you have if you spent $1 billion a day. Because your billions are earning more billions. So just, you know, don't go away mad. Just go away. Enough. I'm looking at something that I think that you would really think you would really enjoy. A friend of mine posted this at another friend of ours. And I'll give him credit for it. His name is Michael Benavides. He's a lawyer down in Miami. Mm-hmm. Filled out a postcard, and he addressed it to the office of Governor Ron DeSantis, state of Florida, the capital, 400 South Monroe Street. That is actually the address of the capital. Tallahassee, Florida, 32399-0001. So if you all want to write, listen to the recording of this, and, you know, you'll get the address. And on the left-hand side of the postcard where you're supposed to write the message, here's what he wrote. Gay, 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 gay. Because he passed a law that said, don't say gay. So he wrote it instead. And he sent this off to the office of the governor of the state of Florida. I thought this was hysterical when I saw it. Hopefully you're laughing out there, too. I just so you know, I mean, there are people who have a sense of humor about this, and, you know, it's great.
Right, right.
And I think sometimes you have to laugh at this stuff to diminish these people because they're serious. And if you laugh at – what was it – what's his name from – Mel Brooks. And Mel Brooks was asked once why he makes fun and makes people laugh at Hitler. What's so funny about Hitler? And he said, because the one thing that he would not have been able to stand is people laughing at him. So I make fun of him. Because it's the one way to diminish him, to make him a joke. I'm going to sit down and spend my life writing jokes about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That's my.
Because he can't stand that either. That's his nightmare.
Yeah.
That's his nightmare. People laughing at him is his nightmare. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am going to put together. I'm going to listen to everybody who tells jokes about him. I'm going to write them down. I'm going to publish a book giving everybody credit for their joke. I'm not going to steal their jokes. My name is not Milton Berle. Okay? I know who's Milton Berle. Forget it, people. I'm not going to explain it to you. Okay? But I'm going to start collecting all the jokes that are told about him, and I'm going to publish a book. Okay? Okay? I'm going to publish a book. The greatest collection of jokes about Donald Trump. I bet I'll sell 10 million copies of that book. I will be a really, really, really rich guy. I'll have more money than Donald does. I want him to sue me for libel. Okay? Because I'll be able to afford to pay it off. So I want him to sue me. Okay? Okay? I want him to sue me. I honest to God. I think that, what, can you think of a better coffee table book in your entire life?
Right.
Okay, could you hear the laughter rolling through the country? Okay? I think it'd be a big hit. I really do. I'm sorry I said this, because now somebody else is going to go do it.
I know.
But I
you
mean,
let the cat out of the bag.
Okay, I just gave the, okay, Marilyn, I know you're sitting there saying, why are you giving away that, okay, to somebody else? You're right. I just did a stupid thing. I gave it away. Okay, but I would buy the book. Okay.
Yeah,
if somebody else does it, I'll buy the book. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't care. Yeah. Okay. Be that as it may. Okay. What did we miss? I know there was other stuff we wanted to talk about.
Well, I wanted to add to that, because that's interesting. Is that, you know, authoritarian people like, you know, well, these authoritarians, one of the key components of their personality is what you were just talking about. They just hate being laughed at. And as long as we're talking about that, I wanted to point out, I have another friend who I talk to often. And usually when we talk about Ukraine, among other things. And he keeps on about this. He says, you know, Putin is obviously dangerous. You don't know what he's going to do. You know, then the angrier he gets, obviously, the more dangerous he is, right? You know, the old cornered animal metaphor. But then he always says this, you know, his anger is intensifying. Putin's anger is intensifying. And here's why. It's not because, right? It's not because people are disloyal to him. It's not just because that. It's not just because he's facing tactical and strategic failure. But it's because the world is starting to laugh at him and his army. Now, not to diminish the seriousness of what they're doing.
And it's 30-yard
right,
table.
And it's
what they're really
loving. Yeah. You know, he's put himself out there and suddenly people are his appearance. They're making fun of his stature. They're making fun of, you know, his ignorance about the actual military capabilities that he possesses right there. And they're pointing and laughing. And this is what is driving Putin nuts. He's become a punchline, a pariah. He can handle that, right? He doesn't care about being a pariah. That's not a problem for him. But being a punchline, he can't handle that. And that's just, I thought that was interesting. Because that's a characteristic where you see, again, Trump absolutely had no sense of humor about himself. Couldn't stand the idea of people laughing at him. And so that's, like I said, I think I've missed my calling. I went into law. I should have gone into psychology. You know, it's much more interesting.
and you don't have to yell to get heard.
Right.
You're a psychologist. You just talk calmly to people. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't yell at your clients. That's a good way to be out of business.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay. Well, I go to my psychologist because he yells at me. It makes me feel better about myself.
No, that's what my primary care physician, that's what he's for, is to yell at me, right?
My cardiologist does that to me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Now it's my endocrinologist, but it was my cardiologist. I guess.
Right. Yeah.
I can't handle this anymore. There's enough of this. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm having fun today. This is more fun than you should have with your clothes on. This is honest to God the truth. Okay. Okay. Oh God. Okay. So, all right. Well, it's 11 o'clock. I guess Hezzy needs to get rid of us, right, Hez?
No, we don't, right. actually, because our next guest okay. is not going to be able to make it today.
Oh, okay. You got stood up?
I think they got stood up.
Okay, honest to God, I hope it wasn't a lunch date. I mean, I just...
I hope not. It's a little early. It's a little early.
Okay, well, let's see. What else is that? Did you hear the... now, here's some brave guys, okay? I mean, you think Zelensky's brave. You know, he's there, and he's staying, okay? And there were a lot of people that said when he went to Germany to talk, he was never going to go back. And he said, I had breakfast in Ukraine, and I'm going to have dinner in Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in between, I went to Germany for the day. That's a real jet set life. Okay, and he could afford it, too. He's a really wealthy guy. People don't realize how rich Zelensky is. He's a really wealthy guy. He's got mm-hmm. a lot of money. Okay, so it ain't going to do him any good if the Russians get their hands on him, but, you know, be that as it may. But there are three guys that hopped on a train this evening because it's nighttime there. It's
yeah.
getting pretty close
yeah.
to nighttime there, if it isn't already. The prime ministers of Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovenia got together and said, we're going to have a boys' night out. We're going to
yeah.
go to Ukraine. Okay? And
mm-hmm.
so on their boys' night out, they hopped on a train, and they're going to Kyiv. They're not just going to Ukraine. They're going to Kyiv.
Mm-hmm.
A city that's almost surrounded, right? Because they want to show their solidarity with Zelensky.
Yeah.
Those are three brave guys.
Yeah.
They could end up dead. Of course, they're not a pregnant woman, so I guess, you know, they'll survive.
Right.
Because the Russians only kill, you know, women and children.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't kill... I can't kill the Ukraine soldiers, so they decide if I can't kill a soldier, I'll kill a woman or a child.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that those guys are going there for no other reason than to be seen with him. There's nothing else they can do other than accept the refugees and take care of those people, and they are taking care of those people. But... they have no reason to go there. They can talk to the guy on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going there. Now, Biden's talking about going to Eastern. He's not going to go to – there's no way that anybody would allow our president to go to Ukraine. Okay?
Right.
That's how we got Yamamoto. We found out that he was touring, and we shot him down out of the air in World War II. So – there's no way that you sneak the president of the United States into Ukraine like some presidents snuck their way into Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to Eastern Europe. He's going to go to Poland. He's going to go to Romania. They know how to, and truthfully, it's pretty dangerous because if Putin could find a way to intercept and kill Biden, he would. I have no doubts about that, thinking there's no way the United States would attack him over killing Biden because I'm a bad guy and I got nuclear weapons and you're scared of me. And so I think that if Biden does this as well protected as he is, it's still dangerous. It just takes one missile. That's all it takes. So... these guys are showing, and it's all to be seen there. This is the place, if you're in favor of democracy, to be seen. Zelensky, if he were to actually survive all of this, would be the leader of the free world. I think that's just amazing and incredible that these guys are going to walk into a war zone. Just to show support for the guy. Roosevelt wouldn't go to England. He made Churchill come to him. He didn't travel over there until we had so much control that it was safe for him to go. And he took routes that made it safe for him to go, whether it was to Yalta. Potsdam was after the war, and that wasn't him. That was Truman. President of the United States is going to go within a couple hundred miles of a war zone with controlled by a guy who wants to kill him. I think that's something.
Hello.
I think that's a good O on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's see, what else am I finding that's important? Germany's going to buy F-35 jets. Do you have anything, mm-hmm. idea how important that is? Do you realize the 180-degree shift of the German government?
Right. Yeah.
Building a military instead of depleting, mm-hmm. them. They only had 100,000 people in their entire military.
Yeah, that's going to change.
They're doubling their expenditures. They're buying fighters. They haven't bought fighters since they had F-102s, you know, the funny-looking one with the little stubby wings? Back in the 60s? You know, this is all completely turning around from what Putin wanted to have happen. He thought he was going to intimidate the West, and all he proved was your military isn't worth the spit that it's put together with. That's a good thing, too. Okay? I still think the Finns and the Swedes are going to become members in NATO, but I don't know about that. The Finnish president was making statements that he doesn't think that the goal of Vladimir Putin was a regime change. That was not a good statement for him to make, because that's exactly what it is. So what else is going on, Brendan, that we need unrehearsed talk about?
I think we've covered just about as much as we can for one morning. And unfortunately, I've got some meetings coming up, so
okay,
I'll have
to
bow out here.
Okay. Well, Hezzy, have you got
yes,
your headlines
sir.
Ready to talk about? Okay.
Absolutely.
Hezzy,
I'm good. I'm good.
Okay.
All right.
You have a wonderful day. You really do. Brendan?
Yep, have a great
always
week.
A pleasure. Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
We'll
I'm
going to
go take a calm down pill. I'm going to hang up the phone.
Good.
So,
right.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Have a good
Enjoy.
Everyone. Have
Thank
a good
you
one.
Both.
Have a good week, everybody who listens, all 10 of you. and we'll talk to you soon. Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Bye,
have a good
guys.
One.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
There we have it, Professor Jeffrey Swartz and Professor Brendan Beery, both with WMU Cooley Law School's Tampa, Florida campus. So always a pleasure to hear them. And so salient, too. I don't know how they do that. And with a smile, well, which is really terrific. Well, we're going to get cracking on some other things today, all to do with the news, that's for sure. One second here. Let me just quickly look. I wanted to first start off with some local stuff. Well, it's not so local, it's international, but it's going to all impact us one way or the other, because it might give us some lessons. Evidently, China is reporting that more than 5,000 COVID-19 cases have been found in the last 24 hours. A very, very frightening circumstance, that's for sure. And it's an all-time high for China. So China reported 5,280 new COVID-19 cases today. More than double the previous day's tally and the highest daily count since the start of the pandemic. The northeastern province of Jilin was worst hit, accounting for more than 3,000 cases, according to the National Health Commission. Since the coronavirus first emerged in the central city of Wuhan in late 2019, China had successfully suppressed large-scale outbreaks through its strict zero-COVID strategy, which involved hard lockdowns that confined huge sections of the population to their homes. But on Tuesday, today, was the sixth day in a row that more than 1,000 new cases were recorded in the country's second biggest economy. At least 11 cities and counties nationwide have been locked down because of the latest surge, including the southern tech hub of Shenzhen, home to 17 million people. Hong Kong stocks plunged by more than 3% today, extending the previous day's double or tech-fueled route, and dozens of domestic flights at airports in Beijing and Shanghai were canceled Tuesday morning, flights tracking data had showed, and an outbreak at Volkswagen Group factories in the Jilin city of Changchun also prompted three sites to shut down on Monday for at least 3 days, according to a spokesperson. And various other cities, including Shanghai, have sealed off certain neighborhoods and buildings as authorities have sought to minimize disruption to daily life. But health officials have warned that tighter restrictions could be on the way. Jilin's governor vowed to go all out to, quote, achieve community zero COVID in a week during an emergency meeting on Monday night, state media had reported. And residents of Jilin, which is on the border with North Korea, were banned from traveling out of and around the province on Monday. So, very, very frightening circumstance, to say the least. Well, this is very interesting to talk about Russia. Russia is rallying militias ahead of the Ukraine urban assaults. Well, it seems that a Russian call for fighters from Syria and Chechnya to join the war, its war in Ukraine, is motivated by plans to take major cities with urban warfare tactics, which will require overwhelmingly superior attacking numbers, Western observers have said. After 3 weeks of fighting, all of the 150,000 Russian soldiers initially deployed at the Ukrainian border are now inside the country, experts advise. Well, the Russians have no more reserves in the zone, a source at the French military chiefs of staff told Agence France-Presse. But if President Vladimir Putin wants to capture major cities such as Kyiv and the Black Sea port of Odessa, he will have to bolster troops on the ground after an initial campaign phase that has been slower than the Kremlin ever expected. This could equate to a numerical superiority of roughly 10 attackers for every Ukrainian soldier defending the urban centers, according to a military source who asked not to be named. Well, local knowledge of mobility and early occupation of vantage points typically favor defending forces in urban combat, added the source. Well, the Kremlin said on Friday that volunteers, including from Syria, were welcome to fight alongside Russia's military in Ukraine. On Tuesday, a war monitor said that Russia had drawn up lists of 40,000 fighters from Syrian army and allied militia ranks to be put on standby for deployment in Ukraine. In a country where soldiers earn between $15 and $35 per month, Russia has promised them a salary of $1,100 to fight in Ukraine, the observatory had reported. Putin needs more troops than he thought he would, and he needs irregular troops because this war is becoming insurrectional, a Western security source had said. After failing to conquer Ukraine quickly, Russia now needs massive reinforcements in terms of equipment and troops to continue the war, said Mathieu Bolleg, a French fellow, a research fellow specializing in Russia at Chatham House, a think tank in London. Moscow's recourse in Syrian soldiers follows on from Russia's intervention in 2015 in the war-torn country on behalf of the government, helping President Bashar al-Assad clock up decisive victories in a decade-long conflict. Russia's Air Force notably helped Syrian forces during their siege of rebel-held Aleppo. Syrian troops and fighters have been deployed in foreign theaters before by both Russia and Turkey in Libya and by Turkey in Nagorno-Karabakh to help Ankara's ally, Azerbaijan. Putin has ordered his forces, quote, to hold back on any immediate assault on large cities, end quote. That's what Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Monday. But he added the defense ministry, quote, does not rule out, end quote, the possibility of putting large cities, quote, under its full control, end quote. Ukraine's president Volodymyr Zelensky slammed the Russian recruitment in Syria, saying that Russia was hiring murderers. Guess how close we are? Fighters from Russia's overwhelmingly Muslim southern region of Chechnya are also loyal to the Kremlin and battle-hardened from reported past deployments in Syria and eastern Ukraine. Numerous videos posted on social media have suggested that they are already present inside Ukraine. Ramzan Kadyrov, a strongman leader of Chechnya, claimed on his Telegram channel on Monday that he had been in Ukraine just outside Kyiv alongside the forces. Quote, you don't have much time left, he wrote in a taunting message to the Ukrainian leadership. Quote, better to surrender and join us, he said, adding in a gloating aside, guess how close we are to Kyiv. Kadyrov, a devout Muslim who rules the Russian region in the northern Caucasus with an iron fist, is a former rebel turned Kremlin ally with a paramilitary force in his command. At the start of the Russian offensive, images circulated on social media networks showing a square in the Chechen capital of Grozny filled with soldiers claiming to be on their way to Ukraine. Kadyrov's forces are accused by rights activists of numerous abuses in Chechnya, including killings and enforced disappearances. On Tuesday, Kadyrov indicated he was back in Chechnya, welcoming to the region the Secretary of Russia's National Security Council, Nikolai Patrushev, a key member of Putin's inner circle. Oh, gosh. Let's look at some other things which come into play here as well. Bear with me a moment. 1 second. Let me just quickly look. Bear with me a second here. This was very interesting. You may have heard of this. It made quite a stir. And evidently a Russian state TV producer interrupted a newscast in a daring act of dissent when she proclaimed on the air, no war. Marina Ovsyannikova is a producer at Russia's state TV Channel 1. She interrupted a live news bulletin on the channel on Monday, holding up a sign behind the studio presenter and shouting slogans denouncing the war in Ukraine. She could face up to 5 years in prison. And there is dissent, that's for sure, that's coming by. So we'll have to see how things work out. This is also very compelling, and this is with regard to U.S. sanctions. The United States has renewed sanctions on Belarus's Lukashenko as three European leaders head to Kyiv. The U.S. reauthorized sanctions against Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko on Tuesday, that's today, as Washington seeks to punish countries that supported Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The prime ministers of Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovenia, as was mentioned by our previous guest, will visit Kyiv today to show support for Ukraine on behalf of the European Union. Their visit comes as strikes on residential areas in Kyiv killed at least four people, according to emergency services. And there is a lot more that's going on there. Four people were killed in Russian strikes on residential buildings in Kyiv's Sviatoshnytsia. I don't know Ukrainian well, so it's Sviatoshnytsia. District and in the Podilsk area, according to the capital's mayor. The prime ministers of Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovenia are set to visit Kyiv today, according to the Polish prime minister's office. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky highlighted Russian military losses in a broadcast released today, early in the morning. One of his advisors has suggested the war could be over by May due to a lack of Russian resources. Delegations from Russia and Ukraine began a fifth round of talks on Tuesday after discussions were paused on Monday without a breakthrough. The United States warned China against helping Moscow in its invasion of Ukraine in what a U.S. official said were, quote, intense, end quote, talks. An editor at Russian state TV news interrupted a news broadcast on Monday to display an anti-war message in an extraordinary act of dissent, which we mentioned. And the European Union adopted a fourth package of sanctions against Russia, targeting individuals and companies, quote, implicated in the assault on Ukraine, end quote. The office of the French European Union presidency announced on Monday. And the Ukrainian leader is slated to address the United States Congress remotely on Wednesday. Tomorrow, Democratic House and State and Senate leaders announced on Monday. Zelensky will address Canada's lawmakers today. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, on Tuesday said 2.95 million Ukrainians have fled their homeland, including 1.8 million now in Poland, in the largest refugee exodus in Europe since World War II. UNICEF said around 1.4 million children have fled to almost one child a second has become a refugee. This is unbelievable, the turmoil that this has caused around the world. Now, now let's look at something else that is also pertinent, of course, and this is with regard to a ruling by an Indian court, which is upholding a school hijab ban in southern states despite protests. Bear with me a moment as we move on to that. Bear with me a second. Well, a lot of people don't realize that there may be many people in India are of the Muslim faith. And there's a major struggle with regard to that in India. So bear with me a moment and try to see if we can get this done. Somehow this is not coming up. One second. Oh. One more minute here. This is evidently not going through, and I don't understand why. Well, let me just see if we can get this to function. I'm not sure. All right, for some reason, this is not going through. So bear with me a moment. Let me start again and see if we can get this to function. sometimes these things happen. I think there's a major, major crisis with the internet. I don't know what it is. A lot of people have been having problems with the internet as well. Okay, this may have gone through, I'm not sure. Bear with me a moment here. Let's see if we can pull this up. Let's see. Give it one more shot. This may have opened up. I'm not quite sure. Yeah, it seems that events on the ground are putting China in a very difficult situation with regard to Russia's war on Ukraine. So China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, insisted on his Spanish counterpart, in his Spanish counterpart over the phone, that Beijing, quote, is not a party to the Ukraine crisis, end quote, accusing the West of smearing China, quote, end quote, and, quote, fabricating false information, end quote, according to China's official state press agency Xinhua. Meanwhile, U.S. intelligence is suggesting that China has expressed an openness to providing military and economic support as Russia's assault on Ukraine drags on. So has Russia actively sought Chinese assistance with the invasion and the ensuing economic fallout? The director of SOAS China Institute, by the name of Steve Tsang, he's based in the University of London, addressed that very question. And Professor Tsang believes, quote, it is not quite credible that Russia could have potentially asked China for both military as well as economic help to break some of the sanctions. But he does go further in asserting that China was well aware of the invasion in advance, quote, it is unrealistic to think that Xi Jinping did not know about the invasion, at least in general terms, in advance. He did, quote, explains Professor Tsang, but I think both he and Putin miscalculated with the war, and therefore events on the ground put China in a very difficult situation. So that is part of the circumstance that is evidently quite appropriate and salient, and something to think about. So now let's move on to where I was hoping to get to before. I think it's going to be opening up. Bear with me a moment. Tremendous delays. Evidently, an Indian court is upholding the school hijab ban in southern states despite protests. An Indian court upheld a local ban on the hijab in classrooms on Tuesday, weeks after the edict stoked violent protests and renewed fears of discrimination against the country's minority Muslim community. The southern Indian state of Karnataka was on edge for several weeks after a small group of girls in their late teens were prevented from wearing the hijab on school grounds at the end of last year. Demonstrations snowballed across the state, and police used tear gas to disperse angry crowds as more schools imposed their own bans, and radical Hindu groups staged boisterous counter-demonstrations. So after weeks of deliberations, Karnataka's High Court ruled that wearing the hijab was not an essential Islamic religious practice. Prescription of uniform is a reasonable restriction on fundamental rights, the court had said. State Home Minister Araga Jnanendra said that extra officers had been deployed to police stations on Monday night to ensure law and order was maintained ahead of the ruling. Many in Karnataka say that Muslim girls have worn the hijab in schools for decades, just as Hindus, Sikhs and Christians have done with symbols of their respective religions. critics accused authorities in Karnataka, which is ruled by Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party, of seeking to drive a wedge between religious communities that have existed side by side peacefully for generations. The Karnataka government last month attempted to impose a calm by closing schools for several days and banning protests. While the state high court initially ordered a temporary ban on the wearing of all religious symbols, including Hindu and Christian ones in schools. Schools reopened in February under heavy security with a ban on gatherings of more than four people. A number of Muslim pupils told local media they would rather go home than be made to choose between their faith and education. My daughter has been wearing the hijab since she was 5 years old. It is to protect her dignity, Nasir Sharif, 43, the father of a 15-year-old girl, had advised last month. What they are asking us to do is humiliating, he added. So those are some of the issues for sure that's taking place. Now, let's look at some other things that you may find pertinent. Bear with me a moment. Bear with me a second here. I want you to see if we can move on. 1 second. One moment here. Let's see if this works. Okay. Evidently, Zelensky is suggesting that there is a NATO compromise of some sort. This is coming from Reuters, and I haven't read this before, so let me just quickly see. 1 second. Yeah, top Putin ally says that the Ukraine war has been slower than expected. Let me just quickly look at with respect to this. The question is it legal for foreigners to fight for Ukraine? This is an article written by Thompson of Reuters, and suggests that thousands of would-be fighters from outside the country volunteer to help Ukraine defend itself against Russia's invasion. Some may also face legal consequences in their home countries. So citizens of Canada, Georgia, India, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States are among the volunteers, Reuters and other media organizations have reported. So we're going to have to see whether that's going to be legitimate. Britain's traveling to Ukraine to fight could be subject to prosecution upon return, according to the United Kingdom Foreign Office. Travel advisory last updated on Wednesday. So this is going to be very, very interesting. So that's what's happening in the Western world. Germany has said it will not prosecute volunteers who join the fighting, and Danish and Latvian leaders said they would allow their citizens to volunteer. Canadian Defense Minister Anita Anand has said whether Canadians volunteer is, quote, an individual decision. International law requires Russian forces to treat foreign fighters as prisoners of war, regardless of their nationality, said Daphne Richemont-Barak, a professor with the Lauder School of Government, Diplomacy and Strategy in Israel. And that means that Russian soldiers must give volunteers who are captured food, water, and medical treatment. So there's a lot going on all around the world. It's going to be really, really interesting what's going to happen. This is fascinating as well. Evidently, Spain has seized a Russian oligarch's yacht in Barcelona. Spain has temporarily seized a Russian oligarch's $140 million yacht in Barcelona, the country said on Monday, as two sources said that the vessel belonged to the head of Russian state conglomerate Rostec, an ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said on La Sexta television, quote, "Today we seized, the technical term is provisionally immobilized, a yacht belonging to one of the principal oligarchs. We are talking about a yacht that we estimate is worth $140 million. There will be more," he added, without elaborating. Monitoring site Marine Traffic has said that yachts linked to two other oligarchs who are not yet sanctioned are also docked in Barcelona. The 279-foot superyacht Valerie belongs to Sergei Chemezov, a former KGB officer who heads state conglomerate Rostec, two sources had said. Sailing under the flag of St. Vincent and the Grenadines, the vessel is registered to Chemezov's stepdaughter, Anastasia Ignatova, through a British Virgin Islands company, according to a 2021 article published in the Pandora Papers information leak. The West has sanctioned Russian billionaires, frozen state assets, and cut off much of the Russian corporate sector from the global economy since Russia's invasion of Ukraine on February 24. Chemezov was sanctioned by the United States in 2014 and Britain in 2020 over Russia's annexation of Crimea, and was named in sanctions lists this month by the United States and Australia. The U.S. sanctions also targeted Chemezov's stepdaughter as well as his wife and son. He was not named in the latest European list of sanctioned Russian figures, but the European Union imposed measures against him in 2014. A fourth package of European Union sanctions against Russia is due to be unveiled in the coming days. The yacht has been in Barcelona since February 9, according to the Marine Traffic firm, and was until Monday under repair at Barcelona's shipyard MB-92. The yacht will remain under detention while Spanish authorities confirm its ownership and whether they feature on any list of sanctions targets, a government source had said. Chemezov told staff in a message shared with Reuters this week that Russia, which describes its actions in Ukraine as a special military operation to safeguard domestic security, would emerge victorious despite the sanctions. And this was reporting by Belen Careno, Joan Faust, and Isla Bini. Additional reporting from Caterina Demoni, editing by Aileen Lang and Cynthia Osterman. So going to be very, very interesting where all of this stuff goes. Now, let me just quickly look to see. 1 second. All right, bear with me a moment here as we move on to some local stuff. Let me just make sure we have everything in place here. All right, we'll see. Hopefully this will go through. Okay. All right. Let me just see if we've got this right. No, I think we've read all the news information for you. Yeah, we did. I think I read this yesterday, so we're up to date on what's coming out of the Yonkers Tribune. So that's the story there. All right. Well, it's about 12:20, but there's nothing to talk about with you today, so we're gonna say goodbye. And we'll speak to you tomorrow. Let me just quickly see tomorrow. I don't remember who we have on for tomorrow. I'll quickly look at the calendar. and see what we have. One second. No, I don't think we have anything in particular scheduled for tomorrow. I'll just check, but I don't see anything listed here. Maybe I'm making a mistake. One second. No, we don't have anything scheduled for tomorrow. So we may just not do a broadcast tomorrow. I'm not quite sure. Trying to catch up with so many other issues as well. Okay, so that's a story for us at the moment. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Now let me go back to our studio screen, and then we should be okay. Where are we here? Okay, there we are. All right, I think that's it. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Goodbye.